Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. Electric vehicles are all the rage. Some people are buying them. Others are critical of their limitations, particularly owing to range anxiety. And others still bemoan the cost. The truth is that as batteries get stronger and the costs of the cars go down, we're still going to need people with the capability of setting up and maintaining a whole charging infrastructure as robust as our corner gas station is today. So what's involved in that process? Find out today here on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is Rue Phillips, and he is a fascinating gentleman. He's got a background that some of you may recognize as a guitarist, but he's turned his attention in these later years to something else that's very, very interesting and in the forefront of our thinking these days, and that is the electric vehicle and all that surrounds it. Now, Rue, many consider you to be visionary in this area. You have founded or led several successful companies in the clean tech space. You were the founder and president of 365 Pronto, the world's first platform to match clean tech asset owners with a local and on-demand service. And of course, now you are with a group that is called Skill Fusion. And you've got to tell us what Skill Fusion is all about.
Thanks for the introduction, Larry. Skill Fusion is a digital learning platform. It's a customer satisfaction platform, if you like, whereby we are bringing new talent into the electric vehicle space, primarily into the operations and maintenance, service and repair. Basically, what we are offering is O&M service providers, a talent pool of certified credentials individuals that have taken training to fulfill the obligation, if you like, to upskill electricians which are out there. There's a shortage of labor but in the EV space, but there's not an actual shortage of electricians. And I know that sounds like a little bit of an oxymoron. So Skill Fusion is bringing over that traditional electrician into the electric vehicle market.
Now, electric vehicles have far fewer parts than the internal combustion engine cars, and that's one of the reasons people say that after you deal with the sticker shock, it's a little bit less expensive to drive. But how complicated is it for someone to learn how you maintain one of these? I was at my Subaru dealership recently. They put out, I think, their first EV. And I said to someone in the parts and service department, how difficult is it? What have you seen? He said, none have come in yet for anything. So tell me, will they run forever, or what do you have to do to keep them on the road?
So first off, Skill Fusion does not train electricians to work on the electric vehicles. We are training them to work on the EV charging infrastructure. So the devices which charge the cars. Yeah, when you plug in your electric vehicle into a public charger, there's an obligation by the installer or the network operator for that charger to be working 97% of the time. 97%. That's no more than 11 days that it can be inoperable in a year. So what we're training there, Larry, is the electricians to work on the electrical infrastructure where those cars plug into.
Okay. Well, obviously, that's very important. Now, many of us have read where Tesla has gotten some of the other major automakers who are getting into AV in an aggressive way to buy their technology. Tell us how important that element of charging the vehicle is to the mindset of the consumer these days thinking about purchasing an EV, because many people have that range anxiety.
Yeah, that range anxiety is a big one, Larry. It's the biggest decider of whether, you know, the consumer buys or doesn't buy an electric vehicle. That is being addressed as far as the, you know, EV chargers are being installed in their tens of thousands. In fact, I think that there's a bill right now for every 50 miles there will be a DC fast charger, every 50 miles. And by 2030, 35, you pretty much won't be able to drive more than 5 miles without seeing an electric vehicle charger on your radar in your vehicle. By the way, you do get them in your car on the navigator. It tells you where the chargers are, just like gas stations. So infrastructure implementation is very, very important to overcome range anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. You say 97% of the time. The question is, when I go to a gas station, I usually expect 100%. Is that the goal here? I would imagine it is.
It is eventually. There will be scores. Well, you know, let's look. If the milestones are to be met by 2030, 2035, whereas there will be millions of chargers out there, the chances of you going to an EV charging station and not getting a charge are going to be very, very slim. So you're right. You're absolutely right. 97% should be a minimum expectation. We should be up there in the 99.9%. We'll get there eventually, Larry. I believe we will.
I hear people saying that they're very concerned that it's too expensive. And yet Tesla now has talked about a price cut that can make the electric vehicles more affordable. Will lowering the cost of the Tesla vehicle attract a broader range of consumers? Having said that, Elon Musk, in a recent call with many of his financiers, sounded, well, more like this was going to be utilitarian, this car that is going to be less expensive. And that did not excite a lot of these investors, feeling that we need something that really does snap to get people to move from their currently their internal combustion engine or their hybrid or whatever to fully electric vehicle.
So I've just heard you mention Tesla. You know, right now Tesla is the major player. I think it's got 55% of the EV market, and the rest is, you know, down to the other manufacturers. However, once the Fords and the GMs and the BMWs and the Mercedes and the Peugeots, once the other major manufacturers get into their retooling, so to speak, as far as the costs, they will come down. I think you'll see that Tesla's always going to be a major player, but maybe not as big as it is right now, Larry. I believe that. So costs will come down considerably as you see more implementation from the other big players in the market.
Now, I was interviewing a gentleman about the future of the automobile overall and looking back at the sweep of history, and he thought that Elon Musk, forgetting the manufacturing of EVs, the fact that his technology is being used in the charging space is like owning all of the gas stations in America in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. So does he have a monopoly, and what does that mean going forward about the price of recharging?
Well, right now he does have a monopoly. He's got a great, successful solution. It was a brilliant idea to put the infrastructure in for Tesla drivers. Again, that's going to be more open. Tesla, as you just stated, has opened up its topology, for other manufacturers. I think if anything, Tesla has done, which Elon has done, which is fantastic for the industry, he set the reliability up there. A Tesla owner has a really reliable infrastructure, a rigid infrastructure. So he has set the goalposts, if you like, really, really high, the remaining EV manufacturers to stand up to.
Now, how do we want to look at charging going forward? Because if that really is one of the hurdles, and if in fact, and I believe this, as Ford and GM and some of these new companies get into the development and the manufacture of these EVs, the costs are going to go down inevitably. I know China's in this space as well, many others. So the question is, if someone is a little bit confused and they say, well, am I going to have to upgrade everything in my home to charge my car? Is the grid capable of handling that which is going to come online soon? What can you say about that? Because I was reading a guy in Forbes Wheels, a contributor. He said, don't buy the biggest, highest capacity charger. Virtually every level 2 home charger, the kind that runs on 240 volts, will top off your EV batteries overnight. So for somebody who doesn't even understand, if I take a day trip and I go 80 miles, what do I do then when I park it again in my garage?
So for the most point, people that drive electric cars are going to be charging at home, Larry. They're going to have a home charger. Now, I want to address 2 points that you said. Will the grid cater for these masses of the influx of electrical energy that's required for home charging? The answer is yes, mainly because people are going to be charging at night when the demand is a lot lower. So if you live in a cul-de-sac and there are 10 houses and 10 the homeowners decide to go and buy an electric vehicle, it's not going to blow the transformer up, into the early load. That's not going to happen, because the utilities are going to incentivize individuals to charge their vehicles at night. They'll do that by giving you cheaper cost electricity for off-peak. So off-peak charging will be critical to lower the demand on the grid. Additionally, what you were talking about is that range anxiety. Now, most cars are going to be coming out with a mileage range of between 250 and 400 miles. Mm. And they're going to be coming with they'll start the day with a full charge because they've been charged at home. So it's only when you're going really long distances that you're really going to have that anxiety, if you like, for the public infrastructure.
Now, how long, if you're not doing it at home, and you are one of these people who likes to take a day trip, or we know how inconvenient it's getting to take an airplane, so if somebody wants to drive, I love to drive, in effect, because I can just throw things in my car, and I don't have to think about their tonnage and the weight and so forth. So the question is, at what point will I want to recharge? I was reading that you should not let it necessarily get down to what is the equivalent on our current gas mobiles as E. What do you say about that?
I totally agree with that. You wouldn't want to be pushing your vehicle. It's not that it would damage the batteries or anything, Larry, but you really wouldn't want to be driving it to empty. I'm an EV driver. I get down to about 20%. I have actually gone down to 10% when I start looking for a local charger. Living in California, I've never had a problem. There's always one within my range. Yeah, typically, you would start the day with a full charge on your vehicle, and then you would probably most commonly deplete the battery to around no more than 25-30%.
Now, as I look at it, because I'm looking now at a diagram of the skateboard-style platform with a battery set beneath the floor and between the front and the rear wheels, and this is on a Tesla Model X chassis. Tell me where the battery is on most of these EVs. Explain to us how that looks and the implications of it from a functionality standpoint.
So obviously the battery packs. What's interesting about these batteries, Larry, is they're like hundreds and sometimes thousands of little Panasonic type laptop batteries. That's what they look like. So they're not one big massive battery pack that you see when you open the hood. And I think they call that a frunk, by the way, because the difference between a trunk and anyway, the batteries are laid out on the chassis. They have a lifespan of anywhere between 10 and 12,000 cycles. They vary from different vehicle manufacturer, obviously, to the layouts. But Tesla's pretty much got it down. They've got a great little system going on.
Now, there are different kinds of EVs. There's the plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. Lots of people are saying that's good if you're just starting out as someone who is purchasing into this space. Then there's the fuel cell electric vehicle, and then there's the regular electric vehicle. Do you want to help us through this little thicket?
Yeah, absolutely. So the regular electric vehicle is called a BEV, a battery electric vehicle. What's interesting in all that you just said, they're all electric vehicles. So you have a zero emission battery electric vehicle, which is full battery. It has no engine whatsoever. In the case of Tesla, it has four individual motors which power the wheels, one on each. So it's an electric motor on each one of the wheels. A plug-in hybrid is, if you can imagine, like an engine which charges the battery. So it's a little generator. So it's an electric vehicle per se, that when the battery depletes, the engine kicks up and charges the battery. So essentially you're driving an electric car, but the engine will kick up, the gasoline engine, when the battery depletes. And then, of course, the fuel cell, which is a totally, totally different technology. Early days yet, it will be implemented. I guess you will be seeing it in the future, whereas you'll be, instead of being buying gasoline, you'll be buying hydrogen. And that hydrogen is converted into electrons, again, for an electric motor. So it's still an electric vehicle powered by the conversion of hydrogen via the fuel cell.
Well, evidently, the hydrogen tank is bulletproof. Were the tanks to rupture, the hydrogen vents upward where gas pools on the ground. So is that safer, ultimately, the hydrogen, or no?
I believe it is. I actually believe it is safer than gasoline. I'm not an expert in that technology, but the people are saying, well, it's a lot safer, it's a lot better. Why don't we go with the fuel cell? Well, the fuel cell is way out there before we're going to see hydrogen stations, in every gas station. There are a few manufacturers. I think Toyota was pushing for the fuel cell vehicle, over their electric vehicle. I think you will be seeing it, but probably not as prevalent as the battery electric car, Larry.
Okay, our guest is Rue Phillips. He's helping us prepare for the electric vehicle era, and he's trying to ensure a skilled workforce for the charging infrastructure, and that is no small thing. It really isn't. So tell us what it is that you have to prepare these electricians to do. They are going to go out and install. They're also going to service to make certain they stay online most of the time. And where are these charging stations as you see it? I mean, you have a lot of experience in California. California is probably ahead of the rest of the country, as it often is, in adaptation to this technology.
Yeah, so first and foremost, what we're doing is educating the electrical industry that this, it's no longer a dream of the future. It is the now. It is happening. So there are still a lot of people out there think, well, it's never going to happen. No one's going to buy these cars. Well, the fact is the manufacturers are retooling, and they are going to be, releasing beautiful new electric vehicles. So what we have to do, and what Skill Fusion is doing, is educating the existing traditional electrician to say, come over, learn these new skills. There are certain scopes of work which you're not presently doing, such as network communications and changing cables and regular operations and maintenance on these new technologies. So Skill Fusion is out there to, first off, educate the existing traditional electrical contractors and electricians to work on these new devices.
Now, as we look at charging, ultimately, aside from the current range anxiety and price sticker shock anxiety that some people have, they're worried, I'm going to be sitting here for hours charging my car. Obviously, we're so used to things like gasoline fill-ups, which take us maybe, 4 minutes, 3 minutes. What is the expectation about charging and the time that will be required?
So it all boils down to that factor again, Larry, of whether you're going to be using convenient home charging. Again, I don't use public infrastructure, and I use my EV all the time because I come out with a full tank of gas, pardon the pun, the electrical energy, and I go back with maybe 30%. So that, most people that are lining up for chargers, they're probably doing long distances or they don't have home charging. Convenient charging, level two charging, is where, the burden is going to be lifted off exactly what you said. People are lining up and how long does it take? The quick answer to how long does it take, a DC fast charger will give you anywhere from 80 to 90% within 30 minutes. So, the new DC fast chargers right now that are out there are really big and beefy, 350 kilowatt devices, chargers that, literally you could get a charge within 15 minutes if you have the right vehicle that could receive that amount of energy. But a level two infrastructure, I'm a big fan of level twos. They're smaller devices, 240 volts. Anywhere from 6 to 9 kilowatts, and these are, I call them convenient chargers. If you're going to be at a shopping mall, if you're going to the movies, the libraries, schools, workplaces where you'll be parked for 8 hours. So, this thing about, there's not going to be enough chargers and we're going to be lining up for them, I think that's going to disappear really, really quickly.
Now, who's going to own these chargers? Is it going to be public? Is it going to be private? Is it a combination? At the beginning, what's happening, for example, in California as to making it possible? Because California put in the requirement, I believe it is, that by 2035, there will be no internal combustion engine cars sold. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be many on the road for many years past that. But tell us who owns these charging stations.
First and foremost, every time someone buys an electric vehicle, they'll be given the option to own a charger at their home. That's number one. So you buy an electric vehicle, find a local contractor trained by Skill Fusion that can install that EV charger. Secondly, the public infrastructure right now, obviously you've got the Tesla network, which is owned by Tesla. You've got big companies like Electrify America, EVgo. There will be privately owned networks. There'll be, new network operators with portfolios. When I say portfolios, there'll be companies like BP and Shell that will be getting into this. Instead of having gas stations out there, they will have portfolios of, let's say, 10, 20,000 EV charging stations. So the oil industries, you're going to see those move over to electrification as well.
Now, as I look at it, I live in the state of Connecticut, and we have a legislative regulation review committee that's going to be having a meeting soon to consider regulations that will require all new vehicles sold in Connecticut to be electric. And I got a mailing from this group that said, do not CARCT, stop the gas vehicle ban now. You've heard this, Rue, because you're in this new arena. Tell us what kind of pushback there is against the electric vehicle adoption by a certain time, like 2035. Some people say, you know, it's not that much cleaner. That's what they say, because the mineral extraction to build these cars and such. What do you say to all of that?
Well, I'm an advocate for clean energy and renewable energy. I've owned companies that were involved with solar renewable energy, Larry. It's all about our dependence on oil. It's not infinite. And although people will say, well, we've got stacks of oil left, we do, but it's going to be more costly to get out the ground. You know, I mean, worldwide politics, are all dictated about the cost of oil. So what we're trying to do is move over to a cleaner solution. It's not, it's not just like, well, is it a good or bad idea? It's actually to save the planet, number one. Number one is the people up above, they know something that we don't, that 200 years from now, we're not going to be able to be filling up our gas guzzlers like we are now. There's still a pushback. There is a pushback. I think there always will be. Probably when the horse and carriage went to the combustion engine, it was probably the same thing there, Larry. You agree?
I agree. Let me ask you, though, about battery technology, because that's the other thing, not just how quickly can I charge, or will my electric company, which already confuses the heck out of me, how they price and distribute, but this issue of battery technology, it's always been one of those difficult things to figure out whether, in fact, it's going to continue to get cheaper, smaller, cleaner, better. So tell us, how do you look at the battery technology of this era, and how quickly, using Moore's law, is it going to get better and better over time?
I personally think there will be absolute, scientific advancements in battery technology. I really believe that. We're due it right now. I mean, in fact, we're overdue. The best we've got right now is the lithium technology. I believe it's mostly adopted, but there will be a revolution that's going to happen with battery technology. And what that's going to do, it's A, going to reduce the cost, and B, it's going to increase the range. But I want to point out to your listeners here that we have electric vehicles and battery technology right now that does 400 miles range, which is very, very close to most gasoline cars. That's number one. Secondly, it's cheaper to run a vehicle on kilowatt hours than it is gasoline. All we have to do is address the cost of the EV itself, is to bring that down, and then it makes total common sense.
Well, solid state cells should be coming into the market in about 5 years, I've read. Solid material would replace the gooey electrolyte now commonly used in these lithium ion batteries. So there are many improvements ahead. What do you say to someone who says, well, what's it going to take for me to get that electrician into my home to install? And I guess the other question, clearly, America, as you know, has a lot of social inequality. We have a lot of people who don't have a garage. They don't have a driveway. What are they in for in the future, because they live in massive apartment complexes and such?
So multifamily dwellings are being addressed right now. There are companies that are putting, 10, 20 chargers at multifamily dwellings. So there is a solution towards, if you don't own your own home, that you will be able to charge. Absolutely. With the combination of the public infrastructure and multifamily dwellings, that won't be a problem. Now, if you own your own home or you live in a single family dwelling, finding a local electrician, again, if Skill Fusion, where our plans are, is to train and certify individuals so that they can actually do the service and maintenance. There's another organization called EVITP, which is Electric Vehicle Installation Training Program, where they are training electricians to do the installations of them. So the future electrician will be literally, you know, able and ready to install your charger once you've bought your electric vehicle, the local. All I recommend is he's licensed, that he pulls permits, that he's a trained and certified individual.
In closing, you know that we passed a big infrastructure bill here in America. The question is, how much has it accounted for the variability and the various needs that we are going to have to accommodate this changeover, which is pretty dramatic, going from the internal combustion engine to the electric? How much have we accounted for that as it relates to our vehicles and subsidies and even our roads and transponders? Do you think we've done enough in this new legislation to account for where we're headed?
I think it's awesome, the new bills which have been put out there. And, you know, the problem that we have right now is not a red or a blue problem. It's a red, white, and blue problem. So it's surpassed the political connotations, if you like, as whether it's a good idea to spend money on public infrastructure. I applaud the, you know, the government for what it's done as far as looking ahead for the, not just the installation, but the training and the service and the O&M. I think we're doing a great job. I really do.
Well, Michigan, as you know, the car capital in America, proclaims that its vast electric vehicle ecosystem encompasses all facets from mobility and energy to infrastructure and battery development. They even have an office there, Rue, of future mobility and electrification, and a council on future mobility and electrification. And other states that making big investments are Ohio, Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana. They are not blue states. A lot of these red states are doing it too.
It is indeed. As I said, it's gone beyond politics right now. They're doing it because it's a good idea. And, you know, we're thinking of our grandchildren.
Yeah, that is great. Well, Rue Phillips, it has been really a pleasure to speak with you today. If somebody wants to know about the programs, the training, the certification for Skill Fusion, what should they do? How can they reach you?
They can reach us via our website, www.skillfusion.com, or you could reach me personally on LinkedIn. Just type in Rue, R-U-E Phillips, and I'll be in contact with you. I'd be happy to chat.
Okay. In closing, I've got to ask you. Now, you played with Black Sabbath?
Black Sabbath, I did one album, whereas I co-wrote a song with Ozzy and Bill Ward from Black Sabbath. It was a great time.
Are you still playing a lot yourself?
I dabble at home, but not professionally at all. I'm a retired professional guitar player.
Okay, that's wonderful. Rue Phillips, thank you so much for being with us today here on America Trends.
Thank you so much, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.